You're with Raph Epstein on ABC Radio Melbourne.
He's played a painter before. He was JMW Turner in Mike Leigh's biopic. You're going to hear him in a moment as Churchill in The King's Speech. He's been in heaps of Mike Leigh films, Secrets and Lies, Topsy Turvy. You probably, though, know him, and this is how most people, I guess, get recognised. He's part of the Harry Potter superannuation scheme for actors with his role as Peter Pettigrew, a.k.a. Wormtail in the Harry Potter franchise. Here he is in that, in Red Dwarf and The King's Speech.
Harry, look at you. You look so much like your father, like James. We were the best of friends,
how
you know.
How dare you,
So that's a clue, isn't it? Esperanto, hope, hope defeats despair, the despair squid. It's a blatant clue, and it blatant.
Had a speech impediment myself, you know. Family secret, tongue-tied. An operation was considered to be too dangerous. I eventually made an asset of it.
Timothy Spall there as Churchill. He is in town for Mrs. Lowry and Son. We'll get on to that in a moment. Welcome. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Do you remember The Red Dwarf?
I do, yeah.
Oh, do you?
I do remember it, yeah. I mean, I remember it being in a very long speech and thinking, oh, my God, and it was in front of a live audience. I was like, oh, God, please, God, don't let me blow this.
That must be decades ago.
But it was just after the relief of Mafeking, before the First World War. Now, I've got no idea when it was. About 25 years ago, something
yes,
like that.
Yeah. I'd be even more, wouldn't it? What's it like being, I want to get on to Mrs. Lowry and Sons, but I just wonder, once you make that sort of Harry Potter level of exposure, does it change the people coming up to you in the street thing?
Yeah, and it's really bizarre because obviously new generations of kids, youngsters are still watching it and they're being introduced by their older brothers and, you know, and my daughter, who's now in her 30s, became my sort of Harry Potter executive advisor because I hadn't read the books and, I said, oh, they've offered me this park called Peter Pett. She said, my dad, you got to do that. Because I turned down the Spice Girls movie. And I was like,
did you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, so I thought, oh, but she wouldn't let me not do that. I eventually made up for her because I introduced her to Johnny Depp when I did Sweeney Todd. But
you introduced your daughter to this? Oh, well, of course. Run.
Yeah,
oh, that's
cool. Yeah.
That's
and,
was she impressed?
She was impressed by meeting Johnny Depp.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
No, just checking.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And he was absolutely charming to her. Right. He's a lovely, charming fella. What was your original question? We digressed.
That's okay. We digressed. I just asked about Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. No, I was in Harry Potter. I was doing a film in New Mexico a few years ago, and a very urbane American middle-aged couple got in the lift, and I thought, this is, you know, and one turned to the other, looked at me and said, oh, my God, excuse me, sir, are you the rat dude from Harry Potter? I said, I do answer that appellation, yeah. So
nice.
It's not only kids, it's middle-aged urbane
aristocrats. It's global exposure, isn't it?
It's a bit of a phenomenon, isn't it?
Yeah. I want to play part of the conversation. Ellis Lowry looks after his mum his whole life.
Yeah.
She is played with exquisite pain. Let's just have a listen. Vanessa Redgrave.
And Venom by Vanessa Redgrave.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most torturous relationship. Mm. Let's just have a little comment. Here, Ellis, played by Timothy, has received a letter from a gallery owner praising his painting. He's still running around collecting rent. That's kind of his job. And his mother's doing everything to cast aspersions on any sort of praise coming his way.
You can't believe everything that's written in a letter. Laurie, especially not a letter from London. Pretentious people make all sorts of promises and they've no intention of keeping them.
Mr. Bernstein sounded very genuine. I spoke to him on the telephone.
Telephone? You telephoned Mr. Bernstein?
Eventually, I got through to him this evening. That's why I was, you know...
What did he say?
He praised me.
He praised you?
Gosh, she's horrible. But it's fascinating, the relationship. Why did you want to do this film?
Well, because of that, I was so astounded and intrigued by that relationship. I mean, I always knew there was something more than just the representational in his work when I saw it. And then when I read the script, I realised this thing, this devotion he had to his mother, he was her sole carer, you know. I mean, he was kind of preconditioned by her to look after her, really, and enthralled to her every wish. And he happened to become, you know, even though she undermined him all the time, this extraordinary original painter whose impulse was to paint what he saw around him. But the trouble was with that was that she always felt that it reminded her of how they'd come down in the world. Mm. She called them these filthy, ugly paintings that nobody
wants.
Because
they're very industrial. It's like Lancashire.
They are.
Middle century industrial.
Yeah,
England.
And there are all these thousands of people. And in fact, people will also presume that their representation, in fact, a lot of them are from his mind's eye. But what intrigued me about the why I always kind of got something, there was something more to him, was this tension in them. Given that he was, you know, preconditioned by her, and she would never let him go. All these underminers had devised to keep him so he would never leave, and he had never had an intimate relationship with a man, woman, or anything outside this relationship. He was compelled, knowing that he was trained to please her, he was compelled to do something that wasn't pleasing her. He constantly tried to make her understand that this thing he was driven by was something that was in his area, and she always felt that they were dirty, repulsive, and hated them. Also, she was mildly embarrassed by him because he had a very difficult birth. She adored him in her own way, but he represented everything that had gone wrong in her life. She'd only seen it in her midst. There was not this, you know, this embarrassing galoot. There was a genius, yeah. You know.
But she doesn't see that at all.
She doesn't see it.
But he's not, is he bitter? That's what I couldn't quite
he's
work
not bitter
out.
At
he's
all.
Not, is he?
No, not in the slightest.
But
he's used to it.
Horrible.
Absolutely horrible. But he, see, this is the natural condition. He grew up with that. He had no other mother to judge it by. He was an only child. Mm. So he didn't, you know, and he was a loner. So he didn't, he just accepted it. They have fun at times in it. But what I see in the painting is, given that this thing that he, his desire to please his mother, this, the way of being brought up from birth to look after her, and this impulse to paint this thing from his artistic originality, there's a tension in that. There's a pain in it. There's a melancholy. There's an appreciation of the bleak beauty of the atmosphere, but it's also a self-portraiture. And it's what I think adds to his paintings and makes them over and above just representation. And this is what makes him, to me, an original genius.
Mrs. Lowry and Son is the name of the film. Vanessa Redgrave stars opposite Timothy Spall. Did you always want to be an actor?
At 16, I couldn't work out whether I was going to join the army. I wanted to be a tank driver in the Royal Tank Regiment or go to art college because I was at the same time getting very interested in the army and the surrealists. I did the school play and my drama teacher said I think you should be an actor. So there, the rest is history.
Was it easy in the beginning, being an actor?
No, it was terrible, but I was did all right. I mean, I failed on my A levels and O levels.
You failed on year 12, like your end of school stuff.
Oh yeah, but I went to further education college to retake them and do a part time drama course.
Right.
But I dumped all the retakes and I just stuck to the drama course. But by the time when I was 19, I got into the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, the first drama school I tried for, and them days you got a grant, so all my fees were paid for.
Right.
And my mum and dad were able to help me with it as well.
Did they think you were crazy pursuing acting?
No, they were very encouraging. So unlike this, my mother was very encouraging. I had very encouraging parents. They were working people. My mum was at the time, a self-taught hairdresser, had her own little shop by then, and my dad was a postman.
So would they have known anyone who was an actor?
No, my dad worked in a post office in South Kensington and used to serve somebody who was in upstairs, downstairs, right. And was always, I found out he was always very proudly telling me I was training as an actor.
Right.
Sadly, he died young, but I was able to, you know, my mum saw me have a modicum of success, so that was a great thing, but they were very encouraging.
Just some texts in tribute. Timothy Spall, a legend in Africa, designed Pet. This texter wants you to say, I can't say it properly, you're all right, Barry, in his Brummy accent.
Should I do that? I try not to.
You don't have to.
No, that's okay. Okay. I mean, actually, the accent I use in Red Dwarf is Brummy, so yes. It's the same thing, you know.
I'd like to thank Timothy Spall for introducing me to the word twonk from Red Dwarf. Is there something I was looking at your profile, and you've done a gazillion things.
Mm.
Are there a whole lot of types of movies or types of TV roles that you haven't done that you think, oh, gee, I'd really like to get my teeth sunk into that.
Well, I've had my fair share of diversity, but, I mean, the reality of being an actor is you are, to a larger or lesser degree, artist to fortune. So the great thing is that, you know, you never know what the next thing coming your way is. I mean, there's been parts where I develop and you can be attached to things. I've just done two indie movies that I've been attached
indie.
To. One, yeah, independent movies that... One, I was been waiting for 3 years to happen. It collapsed with money. I've just finished that. So, and then I didn't realise while I was doing that, I got another script through that I really liked, and I'm off to Spain to do another independent movie.
Wow.
So you never know. I mean, the other alternative is you end up in a soap opera or a long-term drama for the rest of your life, in which case you don't have a pension and so on and so forth. But, I mean, as I say...
Well, no, maybe, like, you haven't ever sort of thought, oh, gee, I'd love to be in The Crown or, you know, one of those ongoing TV... Things.
No, I don't. One of the beauties of, I mean, you know, my son's an actor, a very successful actor now as well. And one of the things I always said to him is sometimes you're defined by what you don't do.
Yeah, right.
And the fact that you know, don't ever forget that even when you're out, you have periods of out of work. And I always assume that's all over every time I'm out of work. I think it's it gone rumbled over, you know, 40 years down the pan. That's it. Found out. I said, you're available. You know, if you're in a long-running series and something really, really comes up, you're not going to be able to do it.
Right.
You know, you can't do it.
Oh, you're enjoying that lifestyle, I can see. Thanks so much, Timothy.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Mrs. Larry and Son is the name of the film. Vanessa Redgrave is exquisitely horrible, but there is an exquisite melancholy in L.S. Larry's story.